Just before we get started, everyone, Titus O'Reilly here. You would have heard me saying we have Bazaar Plus, our membership program. If you'd like to join, you get a weekly bonus podcast. You get access to all the past bonus episodes. You get to vote on future episodes. You get early access to live show tickets, a fortnightly newsletter, a members-only chat room, all sorts of stuff. If you've got interest in becoming a Bazaar Plus member, look at the link in the show notes. We'd love to have you on board.
It's Sports Bazaar.
Get into it.
Some of these stories you would say that cannot be true.
I'm fine to us.
The hunt for the weirdest.
This is madness.
It's a masterclass in how not to do things.
The most air-brained scheme I've ever heard.
Strangest.
Oh, wow. You can't make this up.
Things are only going to get more bonkers.
Most unbelievable.
Most genius thing I've ever heard. You say evil, I say brilliant.
Stories to ever occur.
An unparalleled array of deadbeats.
A mecca for colourful characters.
In the world of sport.
Had a taste for testicle soup.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Don't act like you've never done this.
Sports Bazaar.
Opened his mouth and a sparrow flew out. Slept face down with a compass to make sure that his head was pointing north. He hit so many sixes into the members that they retreat into the bar.
I need to lie down after that.
It's time for the leaders of the hunt.
It's 10 cent beer night at the ball bar.
It's Titus O'Reilly and Mick Molloy.
Welcome to the latest episode of Sports Bazaar with myself, Mick Molloy, of course, and doing the heavy lifting, as always, Titus O'Reilly. How are you feeling, Titus? You got a bit emotional at the end of the last one. Are you back?
Yeah, no.
It struck a chord with you, didn't it?
It did strike a chord, you know. So yeah. I took a few cement pills, I've hearted up.
Yeah, I got a bit emotional during all the Hanson brothers talk in the slap shot edition. I wasn't a dry eye in the house.
This one I guarantee will not make anyone cry.
All right, where are we going? What are we doing? No, so give me a sport first.
We're going to baseball.
Baseball.
Which I haven't actually done in a little while. So
no, but they're always good.
It's a rich hunting ground.
A 10-cent beer night. Check.
Oh, 10 cent beer night.
That's one of my favorites.
Easily one of his. We had Doc Ellis who did the LSD and pitched a no-hitter.
A perfect game on LSD.
Yeah. So,
didn't you think Jimi Hendrix was on first base?
He thought Jimi Hendrix and he thought Richard Nixon was the umpire.
That's some good gear.
We've all had a night like that. So we're going to someone who.
And we had a couple of bizarre contracts from the world of baseball.
We did it.
There's
some very weird ones.
Oh, was it? Someone had to be drunk to play?
Yeah, we had one player, that was the Cleveland Indians player who back in the day was told he had to get drinking after he pitched so then he could sober up for the next few days, and it was in his actual contract that he had to get blind drunk.
Well, my lawyers have been letting me down by not inserting that clause.
I know, how you haven't had Well, Ronaldinho, the football player we had in that one, he had his contract. He was allowed to go out to nightclubs two nights a week.
Was allowed to, or oh, so he had negotiated.
Yeah, that he couldn't get in trouble for going.
That is fantastic.
There's a few players I know like that one as well.
Would we ever do Michael Jordan's baseball, but not basketball, but baseball?
Oh, yeah. The whole Jordan, though, getting into like basketball, like his betting, his behaviour. I mean, we should just do Jordan
right
as
to the present day. Right. Does he live in Vegas? He always seems to be in Vegas.
He's always in Vegas.
He's always playing golf in Vegas.
Yeah.
Smoking big cigars.
He once said he didn't have a gambling problem because if he did, you know, he wouldn't be driving a Ferrari. His wife would be, like, not eating and all that.
Yeah.
You're all about a billionaire.
Yeah.
You can still you can cover a lot of sins. You'd do a lot to lose that. So we're going to baseball.
Yeah.
And we're going to a guy and his name, and you might know this, some people listening, his name's Albert Bell.
No, not so, ringing a bell.
There we go.
I was surprised that didn't make you burst into tears.
So in 1966, August 25, he's born. He's named Albert Bell after his father, but he gets called Joey. And he's got a fraternal twin, Terry, so he doesn't look exactly like him. Yeah. They're born in Louisiana. His dad's a high school baseball and football coach, and his mum, Carrie, is a maths teacher. Now, growing up, there's no signs of what is to come.
I can't wait to hear what is to come. Right, so he's a normal boy?
A high achiever. He's an Eagle Scout. He is a star baseball and football player. He's a member of the National Honor Society.
What's
which
that?
Is like on your results, on academic results.
So he's at the top. He's at the pointy end academically.
He's one of those guys that's good at everything, right?
Yeah.
So he's doing all of that.
Proud parents.
He's vice president of the local Future Business Leaders of America.
How old is he?
This is in his high school years. So he's doing it all, right? Much like you and I in high school. He was sixth highest in his high school class. He made the All-State baseball team twice. And then in 1984, he's selected to play for the US in the Junior Olympics in baseball, and he wins a silver medal.
Well, I can't wait to see how this gets derailed.
So his mum says, I brought him up to excel in everything.
She like one of those tiger mums?
Yeah, people in his hometown say he was sheltered and pushed by his mother.
There you go.
You know, so he's got that sort of thing. But by the time he finishes high school, he's 6 foot two, which is 189 centimetres and 210 pounds, so 95 kilos, all muscle.
Yeah.
Big guy. So in 1985, even though he's this good, professional baseball ignored him when he came out of high school. No one recruited him.
What was their problem?
I just don't think he was on anyone's radar really, and he hadn't really done much negative at this point. A few of the big-time college programs also weren't that interested in him, but the exception was Louisiana State, so LSU. And Skip Bertman, who was the coach, signed him and his brother. And he said he was a great player, hit for power and contact. He was a great hitter.
Yeah.
It was during these 3 years where he was there that Bertman, his coach, who was also the US Olympic baseball coach, sensed in him an extreme anger and low self-esteem.
Okay.
Now, that's not a combination you really want.
No, that's not bringing a lot of positive energy to the table. Where's that coming from?
Well,
anger issues at his mum?
A lot of it is, I think his mum was so tiger mummish, as you said, so demanding, and the pressure put on him was huge. So this coach, Bertman, says to Carrie, his mum, I think he needs counselling.
It's a serious
issue. Yeah, I think if he struck out or anything, he'd just start hitting things with his bat, smashing up things like
a tantrum.
And the pressure he put on himself to always be better, you couldn't get him out of the batting cage ever. The early signs are it was really weighing
on
him.
He needs a cuddle.
He needs a cuddle. But Carrie said that he couldn't go to counselling and said, people will talk. So that's why we're not sending him to counselling. In his junior year at college, a heckler insulted him and said some racial things, and we don't know what, but Bell goes into the stands to try and fight him. And this leads to his first ever suspension. The coach said he tried to learn the identity of the offending spectator to get him barred forever, but Bell just believed that they didn't do enough and started to really resent authority as well.
He sounds high maintenance, needy.
If we're going to get down needy, he is. As well as that, his coach, who he already thinks didn't do enough to sort this issue out, he actually benches him often in the 1987 College World Series, which they make, because he's not hustling enough out in the field, and he's also throwing bats and helmets around a lot when he's striking out.
Okay.
So he says, I'm going to sit you on the bench. Now, this affects how he goes in the draft, and he's starting to get a reputation as a hothead.
Yeah, hothead.
It's difficult to control. No.
What year was this, by the way?
This is getting into the 80s now, right? Scouts start to look at him and they can't understand why their best player has been dropped for the College World Series. So they start to think there must be something going on here, and rumours start to get out that he's like an angry man. So when it all happens, Bertram, his coach, said, I could just feel the pressure coming on him from his mum that he was meant to go and make a lot of money as a baseball player from his mum. To bring the whole family up.
This was the plan from the beginning.
And he says the more the pressure approached to the draft, the more the pressure of where he was going to go in the draft, how much money he was going to get, it just building and building and building, right? So teams, by the time the ML draft comes along, they're a bit wary of him. Atlanta Braves general manager Bobby Cox, who's a legend in the sport, came in and said to his entire staff, if you pick Bell in any round, you're fired.
Wow. And this is all still just going on the spidey sense that something's not right with this player.
Yeah, and people have seen him smash up, throw helmets and bats and all this sort of stuff. Bell slips to the second round where the Cleveland Indians pick him up. They decide to take a chance because he is
that's still pretty good, right?
He's an amazing hitter, right? Bell believes this cost him a lot of money, and he was angry at the entire baseball world that this had happened. Mm. He goes into the minor leagues for the Cleveland, and a reporter who'd covered him during college, who worked for the paper in New Orleans, was sent by the paper to catch up and say, how are you going? And he says, I want to interview you. And Bell says, I don't want to be interviewed. And the reporter said, but what about the folks in New Orleans? You know, they want to know how you're going, you know, because that's where you played college.
Sure.
And he just said, F the people in New Orleans.
Okay. There's your headline.
Yeah.
Back in New Orleans.
So in the minor leagues, he starts showing some of the anger issues he'd developed in college. He'd smash bats, throw helmets. While at AAA Colorado Springs in 1990, he destroyed a clubhouse sink with his baseball bat in a fit of rage, and he gets a 5-game suspension.
By who, the league or his own club?
By his own club. Because he just literally got a baseball bat and took it to a sink.
Yeah, we're starting to work out why he spent a bit of time on the bench in the dugout.
So the Indians sent him to a hospital called the Cleveland Clinic where he received treatment for alcoholism and counselling and temper control.
Okay.
Bell comes out of this and announces he's giving up alcohol for life, which he does. He never drinks
all again. Right. Well, there's a positive.
He also says he's no longer going to be called Joey. He's going to his name of Albert and will only be announced as Albert because he wants a fresh start.
Yep.
Carrie Bell comes out his mum and says he's not an alcoholic at all. He's just gone along with it because if he doesn't, the Indians will dump him. So she's very much.
It's not like, helpful.
It's not helpful.
It's not helpful.
You get a sense that.
It's a bit of ass covering to it. It's like, well, there's nothing wrong with my boy. He was brought up perfectly.
Yeah.
There's nothing reflecting badly on me here.
Yeah, he's not an alcoholic. He's not allowed to go to counselling. Yeah. He's all this doesn't sort of need stuff. In May 1991, though, this is after he comes out of the clinic, a fan tauntingly, knowing about his alcoholism, invites him to a keg party. Like he's in the stands. He yells out, Albert, do you want to come to a keg party?
Wow.
Albert picks up a foul ball and throws it into the fan's chest as hard as he can. He's suspended for 6 games.
How's that cancelling going?
It's not going well. A year later, he charged the mound after a Kansas City pitcher threw too close to him a few times. They both got ejected after an all-in brawl.
Yeah.
He got another 3-game suspension. In May 1993, he also brawled with another Kansas City pitcher after they hit him and he gets another one. But the thing that's happening is despite him being this, his hitting is so good. He is going nuts. He's hitting home runs and high percentage batting average all the time. And they realize the angrier he is, the better he
plays.
Teammates start to go, if he comes in happy, he has a terrible
back. Cooked.
Yeah, we're cooked. He's like the Incredible Hulk.
If he smashed a sink to pieces, we're in. We will win.
Yep. So they just figure they've got to do this. So by 1993, he's hitting so good that he's now permanently on the Cleveland Indians starting team. They've been terrible forever at this point. His behaviour, though, makes his teammates a bit wary. He drinks coffee constantly, like just like it's water. So he's constantly in a caffeinated frenzy, his teammates say. So
that's his poison now. Yeah. No alcohol.
No alcohol, but
I'm going to get fried.
After a bad game, he would regularly destroy the post-game buffet.
He's taking it out on the buffet.
He would throw the plates into the shower.
Okay.
The Indians worked out that it was just better to bill him $10,000 a year.
And just deduct.
For the damage he caused to clubhouses on the road and at home. So they just factored it in.
It was just a legitimate expense.
They just basically went, rather than suspend him every time, we're just billing him 10K away at the start of the year. It was like,
Great. Give
us 10K or they wouldn't pay him. Once during one tantrum, there was a guy called Eddie Murray who played for the Indians who was an absolute veteran, very good player. Bell was going nuts. So he grabbed Bell by the front of his jersey, shoved him against the wall and said, I'm tired of your moody inanities.
There's a sledge.
All the players freeze, Bell backs down. Another teammate, Carlos Baega, said, no one can figure Albert out. Omar Vizquel, who played, said, I don't hate Albert Bell, but he was certainly a difficult guy to like.
Okay.
Bud Black, a Cleveland Indians teammate, named Bell Snapper. So he gets his first one.
Did he have any friends? He was just a lone wolf on this team.
He was a bit of a lone wolf, but he was so good. They tried to get along with him. Here's some examples of why he probably didn't have friends. Kenny Lofton was one of the other great star players. Yes. So Bell comes in and he's a superstar on the field. And these other players like Kenny Lofton come in. And Cleveland suddenly go from being the least glamorous, worst team. Remember we did the Cleveland, they had the stadium on the lake in the 10-cent beer night.
Oh, that's right.
And so Cleveland caught fire and it was a terrible stadium. And they built a new stadium called Jacobs Field. It's a beautiful stadium, state of the art. Suddenly they've got these good players. Suddenly Cleveland had gone from being the worst team of almost all time to starting to become good. Now, but it's a big reason of this. The other guy who's a big reason of is Kenny Lofton. So Kenny Lofton once, he would often have his boombox playing in the clubhouse. And one day he was playing, he said it was jazz. And he said Bell didn't like how fast it was. He thought it was too slow. Right, so Bell walked over and got his baseball bat and smashed the poop box with the bat.
No,
yeah, so he just
that's not okay.
Not okay. I mean, just imagine that you're just sitting there.
That's not, you don't go to that as your first option.
No,
you would talk it through or
could
ask
you change the music,
make some suggestions, leave the room, just go over and. Take to town and all right.
Now, another time Bell and Lofton, they had other problems as well. Bell liked the clubhouse to be freezing. And I'm talking like he'd put the air con to the point where the room was 15 degrees Celsius or 60 degrees Fahrenheit, right? And Lofton didn't like it. He liked it a little bit warmer. Not like hot, but just not 15 degrees, you know. So one time Lofton comes in and he goes, oh, it's cold in here. This is terrible. He said, and so he just wandered over and turned up the aircon a little bit, right? Bell walked over, turned down the thermostat back down to what he liked.
Bashed it with a
and then got his baseball bat.
That's the end of that.
And
it'll be staying there for a while.
And smashed the thermostat to pieces so no one could ever change the temperature again.
This is serious. This is clinical stuff.
His nickname thereafter became Mr. Freeze. He was so good on the field, though, that good baseball players get their own candy bar. So there was a famous, like, Babe Ruth had his own chocolate bar.
What a way to honour a sports star.
Yeah, that's what they – so Bell got this treatment from Mally's Chocolates. They said, we're going to have this big conference. We're launching the Albert Bell bar. And he didn't show up because he'd had a bad night the sleep before. Now, the weird thing about all this is he was really smart. You know, he was an honest student. He'd often take on the journalists, the beat writers at chess and destroy them all. And he was a dedicated reader and all this sort of stuff.
Yes.
But he just had this complex that would just set him off.
Socially inept.
Socially inept. Now, one time, there's a thing in baseball. This is in 1994. There was a thing called the cork bat incident. Now, in baseball, there's this kind of belief, this theory that you put cork inside a wooden bat.
And it's a trampolini style.
There's several views of why it helps. One, the bat's lighter two, it has that more bouncy effect that the balls travel first. Now, scientists have looked into this over the years and gone, there's
nothing to it.
It doesn't work at all. In fact, it probably doesn't help. But quite a few baseballers over the years have tried to get away with using corked bats. Right. The most famous, Sammy Sosa, who was later caught with the steroids era, he once hit a bat and it broke in half and cork just littered the you can see it on YouTube.
Oopsie.
It's hilarious, yeah.
Did he get in trouble for that?
He got in trouble. He got suspended.
So cork's banned?
It's banned. You're not allowed to do it. So it's like equipment tampering, you know. Yeah. It's an unfair advantage. Like taking in, it's like when Dennis Lee took in an aluminium bat. You're just not allowed to do it. So in June 1994, Albert Bell's playing the Chicago White Sox, and the White Sox general manager, Gene Lamont, had been tipped off that Bell's bat was corked by someone, right? And so he calls the umpire over and says, I think his bat's corked. I want it confiscated.
Wow, that's a big call to make.
Big call to make, right? It's early in the game. It's like in about the first bat. David Phillips is the umpire, says, give me a bat, and says, I'll investigate this when it's finished. I'm confiscating this bat. So they confiscate the bat, and now the Cleveland Indians are sitting there, and it's the start of the game, but it's early, and they know this is a problem because everyone knows that all his bats were corked.
Right.
So they're all going, what are we going to do? They know it's in the umpire's locker, so the umpires have a room out the back, right? And as the game progressed, they're all like going, this is not going to be good. He's going to get suspended, right? One of the pitchers who wasn't pitching that day for Cleveland, Jason Grimsley, said, as I was sitting there, the thought came to my mind, I can get that bat. So he'd noticed there was a hatch in the ceiling of the Indians clubhouse. He suspected there was one above the umpire's dressing room too, right? So there's a game going on.
Mission Impossible.
Yeah. He could go and get the bat, but he thought, I better replace it with another bat so they don't know the perfect crime, right? But he knows he can't use any of other Bell's bats because they're all corked, right? So you can't just swap a corked one for a corked one. So he got one of Paul Sorrento's bats, who's another teammate. He then goes back.
Switcheroonies.
He then climbs into the ceiling duct with a flashlight in his mouth.
Yes.
It's like Mission Impossible.
It is.
And he starts making his way to the umpire room, right? It took him between 35 and 40 minutes to make it through because he's literally in the ceiling, like with all the, you know, air con and electrical work and everything.
He's Bruce Willis in Die Hard now.
Yeah, exactly. He said it was hot and dark. He was in a ventilation duct at one point. At one stage, he miscalculates where he was, lifted a towel to the wrong room, and he said there was a groundskeeper in there sitting on the couch. I put the towel back down, but he had to know. Thank goodness he didn't say anything.
Oh, this is gold.
Finally arrives at the umpire's room and he drops down onto a refrigerator through the roof, replaces Bell's bat with Paul Sorrento's bat, and he climbs back into the ceiling, replaces the tile and climbs all the way back. And it's another 30 minutes. So the game's like by this point into the eighth inning.
Fantastic.
He's been gone all done. He said, though, when he was in the umpire's room, as soon as he got back up into the roof, somebody came back in the room and he had to sit there and wait
for a
while too. Yeah, so it took him even longer. He comes back and goes, I've done it. I've swapped the bat. Yeah. And I was like, you're a hero.
Yeah.
The minute the game ended, the umpires went back into their room and they see that the floor is covered in plaster dust. From the ceiling, like the whole thing's just covered in plaster dust. So they think, what's going on here?
Hang on a second.
They grab the bat and they look at it, and like all major league bats, it's got the owner's name written on it, Paul Sorrento.
You could still make the case, yep, that's the bat I took out.
It's not my fault you grabbed the wrong one. So there's all this stuff of you guys took the bat and the Indians going, we have no idea what you're talking about. You took it, put it in your room. No one's been in there.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? And they're like, there's plaster dust everywhere. We know someone's gone in there, right? But the Indians just refused to do anything, right? The Chicago White Sox and the umpires complained to Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball respond by threatening to call the FBI.
Oh, this is fantastic.
They said, if you don't return Bell's bat, we'll call the FBI, but if you do, we won't ask who made the switch. So we won't.
Oh, it's a tempting offer.
So they return the bat, the correct one, and then the Major League Baseball make Bell and the Indians general manager John Hart watch as they saw it into two as cork goes everywhere. So Bell's given a 10-game suspension reduced to 7 games on appeal.
Oh, do you know all I've thought about since you told me that story was when he was bashing that sink, was the bat corked?
Yeah.
Maybe that's how they found out. Like if they knew the bat, so there's probably he bashed one too many. They've probably heard.
Oh, yeah.
Every time he breaks a bat, there's cork flying.
Or smashes up a buffet.
Smashes up a buffet or a thermostat or a sink.
Now, in 1995, though, the next year, the Indians get to the playoffs. And this is a huge thing because they have not been to the playoffs in almost 50 years. So pretty big deal for them. Cleveland and Boston played each other in the opening round. In the 11th inning of game one, Red Sox manager Kevin Kennedy yells at the umpires, confiscate his bat, it's corked.
Do they have to do this on a pod?
They
request?
Don't have to do it all the time. And at this point, I think
surely he's not stupid enough to go with a corked bat again.
The umpires, I think, at this they check the bat. They don't cut it open, but they feel it for weight and go, no, we're happy it's
we're
a real
happy.
Bat. Bell responds by smacking a game tying homer over the huge homer. He yells at them and then he lifts up his biceps and points to it, which was a pose so popular it became a bobblehead a few years later. So they go on and they make it to the 1995 World Series.
Here we go.
And Bell's been a big part, right? One problem Bell had is he hated journalists, right? Absolutely hated them. He didn't trust anyone, so journalists are not going to be high in it. During the 1994 season, Bud Shaw, who was a sports columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, wrote a piece describing how Bell records the outcome of all his bats on index cards, which he puts in his locker. After that, he wrote this piece, Bell saw him and went berserk, started swearing and accusing him of rummaging through his locker. Shaw's like, no, I didn't go through your locker. People had told me, you know, I never touched your locker. Bell got angry. He got in Shaw's face and they were nose to nose. And Sandy Alomar Jr., the Indian catcher, grabbed Shaw and pulled him away and said to him, you don't understand, he's crazy. Another time, Rory Firestone with ESPN spent 3 days in Florida in March getting material for this profile of Bell. And Bell was given a memo from the Indians PR team saying, you're going to be interviewed by this guy. He's been here. It's ESPN. He's been here 3 days. He's got a camera crew, sound guy, director. They're doing a huge piece on you. It's a puff piece.
Yeah. It's friendly.
It's friendly. They've agreed to not bring up any of your subjects you don't like talking about. Yeah. So you can't get an easier one. Firestone's all fired up about getting this because people don't
interviews.
Yeah. And he's telling reporters in the press room, like, oh, I'm just really happy to show a side of Bell that people don't see. The nice guy, the guy is like an honors student, yeah. And he's really bright. And then as they're waiting, they watch as Bell jumps in a truck and drives off as they're set up for the interview. He's been there four days, waiting. So Firestone's furious, you know, and this is when ESPN's at absolute peak of power. He calls Bell's agent. He calls some of the Cleveland Indians people. He calls an official in the players' union, and he's speaking with the players' union official. And Firestone said later, he says to me, the problem is you think you're dealing with a rational person. You're not. So that's his journalist relationship.
Okay, yeah.
The Indians are playing the Atlanta Braves in the World Series, and, of course, this is huge for Cleveland. They've been hopeless forever. Yeah. And if people don't remember, go back and listen to 10 Cent Beer Night because it's one of our favourite episodes.
Sure is.
They have lost their first two games, Cleveland, and the pressure is on. Bell's hit one soft single in that game. It was like a little blooper, and so that's it. And all the Indians players, including Kenny Lofton, are terrified because they're all saying to each other, Bell's so chill.
He
doesn't seem that fussed about the fact we're down two games in the World Series.
They should say, check his bat. His own team, check his bat. What?
Lay out the buffet before the game. So more than 2 hours before the third game in the series, with them all worrying about him not being angry, Hannah Storm of NBC's in there with a bunch of other reporters, right? Bell walks in and starts shouting, all you media assholes, get the F out of here now. And some of the reporters look at each other. They're all allowed to be there. Yeah. It's 2 hours before the game and they've got access rights. So most of them leave, but Storm, she's like, I'm doing in the middle of an interview with another player. I'm not even trying to interview you. I'm not leaving.
I'm allowed to be.
Yeah. So Bell walks in and he walks up to her and goes, I'm talking to you, asshole. And starts screaming. He starts swearing and yelling at her for 5 whole minutes. And everyone's just standing there going, what the... She stared him down, but once he left, she was pretty shaken up, right?
Yeah.
He didn't care afterwards. The Indians say you need to issue instantly an apology. And he said afterwards, the Indians wanted me to issue a statement of regret when the fine, because he got fined later, but I told them to take it out. I apologize for nothing. Bell goes out and drives in his first run of the World Series. In the next game, he hits a home run. And in the game after that, he hits a home run. All because he's suddenly angry. But they lose the series in 6 games and he's fined $50,000, which is a record at the time, for his outburst. And he's told to go do anger control counselling, which his mum's not happy about.
We're taking his bat to that.
In October 1995, after this, it was a week after what happened with Storm and they've lost the World Series, Bell was home for Halloween with his father. And Bell's father answers the door and there's a bunch of trick-or-treaters.
Oh, Jesus. No. Okay.
And they say, trick-or-treat. And the dad goes, we don't have any candy. We're not giving out candy. Yeah. And they go, okay. Right, and the door shuts.
Trick it is.
As soon as the door shuts, there's a bombardment of eggs.
That's the contract.
That's the contract,
That's
right?
the deal.
Bell calls the police and says, and it's tape recorded and played later, you better get somebody over here because if I find one of them, I'll kill them. He then because it's a big property, gets in his car, which is a Ford Explorer, one of those big American tanks, and chases them off in the car. So they're running down the driveway and he's speeding after them. The kids are just terrified.
Yeah.
He was later found guilty of reckless operation of a motor vehicle. One of the trick-or-treaters said Bell hit him with his car, but there were no bruises found or anything. So people were a bit suspicious of that. But the guardian of that teenager sued Bell for $850,000 saying you'd bummed into it. And Bell decides to settle it out of court.
I'm waiting for his career earnings in terms of fines here.
Yeah, to really catch up. Now, in 1905, the year that he's made the World Series while this is going on, the Halloween has gone on, he has by far the best season of anyone in the majors, that league, really. But he comes second to voting in the MVP race for the league to the Boston Red Sox, Mo Vaughn. He led in runs scored, home runs, RBI, slugging percentage and total bases, every offensive category, right? And both their teams made the playoffs. He'd finished third, second and third for the American League MVP in this period too, right?
Yeah.
Everyone believes the reason he didn't get voted MVP is because the journalists all hated him, right?
So journalists vote for that.
They vote for it and they were like,
that's terrible.
Buster Olney, who was a writer for the Baltimore Sun at the time but has since gone on to be a very big reporter in baseball, he said, if you believe that a major reason Cleveland Indians left fielder Albert Bell lost is that he's a jerk, you're absolutely correct. I know this because I voted in the AL MVP balloting and picked Vaughn first and Bell second, and part of my rationale was based on personality.
Wow.
So on April 6, 1966, the season's just started again, the next one. And photographers are on assignment for Sports Illustrated and they were focusing on Bell during the opening week for an article that they're writing. And he doesn't like the fact that they're taking photos of him.
A journalist, when they were told, you're going to do a story on Bell, would be going, don't send me. I'm begging your boss.
It's like being told you're going to Syria or something, you know. It's like,
you would rather go to Syria. I would rather be a war correspondent than to go and hang out with.
A guy for Sports Illustrated, photographer Tony Tomsic, he was photographing Bell, wasn't anywhere near him, like got a big lens and everything. And Bell gets furious and throws two balls at him. And this is a Major League Baseball with a strong arm. One ball cuts Tomsic's hand when he raises to protect his face. He's treated in the Indians' clubhouse. Now, he doesn't file a complaint against Bell. He does the sort of the right thing, I guess, in that he's said. But it comes out 2 weeks later and Bell's suspended and Tomsic later sues Bell and won a bunch of money as well. So.
Right.
In May 1906 that year, he also, 18 days later after that, he's running the base paths and an infielder, Fernando Vina, was in his way. And this is on YouTube. Bell just raises his elbow and just cleans this guy up like it's an AFL hit, like it's just a hip and shoulder, like
incredible.
A brutal thing. It comes out later that Bell had warned Vina in an earlier base running incident, if you come out off the baseline again, I'm going to clean you up. Right, so this leads.
This is insanity.
Bell had already been hit twice by pitchers that game, so he was quite fired up. And in the later one when he got hit, he turned, then this is after he's cleaned out one of the other players, he turns to his own pitcher, Julian Tavares, and says, you know what to do. So Tavares comes up and throws at the next player's head and both teams all come onto the field. There's a huge fight. The plate umpire grabs Tavares, the pitcher from behind, and he flips him over onto his back. So it's like full WWE fight. Bell's suspended again for five. And Bell comes out after he's suspended for five games and does a press conference and said, I'm completely unrepentant. We decided that if anyone throws at me, we're going to throw back at them. They started it. We finished it. So with all this going on, at the end of that season, he's a free agent.
Yeah.
And Cleveland are desperate to keep him, even though all of this is happening.
All this aside, yeah.
But the Chicago White Sox are dead keen. And Jerry Reisendorf, who's the owner, he also owned the Chicago Bulls. And this was at the point where Jordan was still playing for the Bulls. Yeah. He makes a pitch for Bell. And the way he pitches to him is he says, Albert, I've got Dennis Rodman. You'll have no problems here.
I know how to deal with
you. I know how to deal with you. Yeah. Do not worry. So they also offer him a 5-year, $55 million deal. It's the biggest in the league.
Surely his mum's happy now.
His mum's happy at this point.
He's done his job. Can't he relax now?
Yeah.
You've done your job. You did what's driving him mad is all the pressure.
Yeah.
And you've done it.
You've done
well
it.
Done.
He doesn't. Relax. You'd be so shocked to learn he doesn't really calm down. In the clause is a contract that says, like, even though this is the biggest contract in baseball, whatever happens in the next 5 years, he will always remain one of the three highest paid players in baseball. So if there's an arms race somewhere else, yeah, his contract, they have to match
bumped
it.
Up the order.
They have to match it. So it could be even
what
more.
What a dynamic. That's pretty good.
That's how good he was, though. People are like,
I will always be acknowledged as one of the best three players in this league.
Yep.
Wow.
The Indians knew they were going to miss him, but Sandy Alomar Jr., the catcher, said, it's not that bad. It was always an adventure with Albert. So he goes on, has two great seasons in Chicago. He hits 50 home runs in one. He's doing all sorts of crazy records, breaking and everything. White Sox, though, aren't attracting huge crowds. And so Jerry Reisendorf comes to Bell, the owner, and says, look, just wondering if you could be a bit more cooperative, like tip your hat to fans. Talk to the media nicely, smile, you know, just really help us with promoting the thing. And Bell says, I'm not comfortable smiling when we're not winning. It's not me. I play better when I'm angry, and just refuses it outright. Sure. When a former Indian teammate comes to shake his hands when they're playing, he turns his back on him and says, they're like any other team, they're the enemy. He comes to Jacobs Field, which is back to Cleveland, but he's a Chicago White Sox at the time. And fans shower him with debris, including Monopoly money. He turns and gives them the finger and gets fined $5,000, right? So in October 1998, he invites a clause that he has to be the top three highest paid player. White Sox decline to give him the raise because they've decided he's too much trouble.
Sure.
So the Baltimore Orioles, Eddie Murray, who'd once held him up against the wall, is now coach of the Baltimore Orioles. He says, come here. Yeah. I think you've mellowed. So he comes, and again, he's the highest pay. He signs another 5 years, $65 million deal with the Baltimore Orioles. His first 2 years, he's very good. He's having a great game. In 1999, he's having an amazing game. He'd already hit three home runs.
Jeez.
And he's up at the plate for his fourth appearance, and the pitch comes in high and it hits him. And the ump says, right, if you get hit in baseball, it's a walk to first base, obviously, right? Albert refuses to take the walk.
I've never seen that.
No one's ever done it before, right?
Like, are they deliberately walking him because he's that good, or do they just hate him so much they want to hit him with a baseball?
I think the motivations are many and varied with Albert. There's a lot, right? So the ump says, no, you got to go to first. That's the rule. You've been hit, go to first base. And Albert's just staring, going, I'm not moving. I want to hit a fourth home run. I'm not moving. His manager comes up and says, what's going on? Albert gets back in the box and sets up like he's about to hit again. And even though the umpire and the pitcher and everyone are still arguing with him, finally after a yellow match, he eventually goes down to first. Everyone's like, no one has ever seen this sort of thing before. In his second season though there, he starts to get arthritic condition in his hip, starts missing a lot of games. And by 2001, the doctors say, look, your career's over. He's 34.
Yeah.
But they keep him on their active 40-man roster for the next 3 years, even though he doesn't play, because it helps. It means the insurance policy has to pay his contract, not the Orioles.
Right.
So he's sort of there. In 2012, he does an interview where he comes out and announces he wants to coach the Cleveland Indians.
Wow. That is hilarious. Of all the stories you've ever done, this is the first one I've heard nothing about his private life. I didn't even know if he was married or had a girlfriend or what he did when he goes home. It's one of those stories you've just solely focused on what's on the field.
No one knows him because he does no interviews.
I've never heard you do a story that's just – so he does have a partner.
Well, he had a partner. She was his ex, and one day she comes out to her car and she finds a tracking device has fallen off it. She thinks, well, that's why he keeps showing up. So he doesn't seem to have done anything particularly violent. He's just hanging around. He's put a tracking device on her car. And so she finds it and she goes, well, that makes sense because he keeps showing up wherever I am, you know. He denies it to her. But then a few days later, he sends a message saying, sorry for doing all that tracking stuff,
okay.
Which becomes
a T-shirt, a catchphrase, what?
No, it becomes used in court against him.
Yeah.
And he serves 90 days in jail and 5 years promotion. So in 2001, he is eligible for the Hall of Fame. And the New York Daily News columnist Bill Madden wrote, sorry, there'll be no words of sympathy here for Albert Bell. He was a surly jerk before he got hurt, and he's a hurt surly jerk now. He was no credit to the game. Bell's boorish behavior should be remembered by every member of the Baseball Writers Association when it comes time to consider him for the Hall of Fame.
Well, that's just outright.
In his first year of Hall of Fame eligibility, he garnered only 7.7% of the writers' votes. That's enough to keep him on the ballot for the next year. But then the next one, he only got 19 votes for 3.5% of the votes. He's no longer eligible for the Hall of Fame. That's it. He's out.
That's pretty mean. Is that part of the criterion, though?
Well, they do sort of. His stats are.
Was he a walk-up start for the Hall of Fame?
He was pretty close to a walk-up start. You could make an argument he didn't quite do it for long enough because sometimes longevity is and that. He's pretty close. Like, I think if he was a really charming,
he was a good guy.
If he was a really nice guy, I reckon he'd be in the Hall of Fame, but he didn't. Bell's sibling, Terry, who's the fraternal twin, is Albert's public relations advisor. Well, he's got an MBA, you know. He once said he'd once calculated how much money his brother had lost in potential endorsements because of bad press.
And just fines.
Which would be a lot.
Fines and court findings.
Terry said that sometimes he tries to improve his brother's image and he will say to a journalist, is this story going to have the word alcohol or Halloween in it? And if they say yes, he says that he's not going to talk to you.
Yeah.
And that is Albert Bell, the angriest man in the history of baseball.
What's he do now? Do you know what he's
he does not much.
He didn't end up coaching the Cleveland.
No, he's been back once to Cleveland with some ex-players and it was seen as this sort of moment of.
Has he mellowed?
Well, he hasn't been in the news.
Does he regret any of his moments? Like often he'd come back from his suspension and go, I regret nothing.
Yeah.
Has he finished his career and gone, I still regret nothing?
He says, see, this is the thing researching him. There are so many on the field as we've just gone through. Yeah. Your point about his personal life, he doesn't hate the media. He's the first one I've come across where it's just like.
I have no interest in you.
I'll
throw baseballs at your head.
Yeah. There's no.
Try and take my photo.
Yeah, there is. If you're taking my photo, you're going to get a baseball thrown at you. There is no in-depth articles. There is no, you know, this is what I'm up to now. There's no speaking tours or there's no book he's written.
No warm welcome back to the.
No one knows anything really about him beyond this.
Well, that's just fascinating. I would love to get an update. You're just saying it's not there.
It's not there. Like, apart from the sort of stalking charge, that's it. Like he's.
We
just,
should put a tracking device on his car.
Sorry
for the tracking stuff. Wow. Well, that's a ripper. I love it. Baseball never lets us down.
Never lets us down.
That is an epic story. Can't Hall of Fame. Door shut.
No one wanted him.
Tyson O'Reilly, you've done it again. Thank you, sir.
If you're interested in more, we have the Bizarre Plus members program. If you love Sports Bizarre, this gives you an extra weekly bonus podcast on top of the one you get anyway. You get access to all those previous bonus podcasts as well. You get a newsletter every fortnight. You get access to the chat room. You get the ability to vote on future episodes as well. And importantly, you get early access to any live shows we're doing. You get that before everyone else. If you're interested, the link is in the show notes.